We're picking up on Samach Amud Beis. It's true the matter of tonight's Gemaras are a little bit easier and a little bit more involved than some of the past ones. It's a great night to be paying attention. Like if you had to pick a night in the past month to come, this is the night over here. And I'm assuming the worst of the future also.
Okay.
It says like this. The Gemara starts off in the very top of the page on Samach Amud Beis. It's actually one of the more famous blasts in the sixth parak, mostly for the sugyas in the bottom of the page, which we'll get up to actually pretty shortly. It's a Tana Rabbanan. The Braisa reads, and if you remember last night, we're in the middle of a bit of an Agadata. This is not totally connected to last night's Agadata, but once we're off on the tangent, we just sort of tangent away. So, Dever Ba'ir, if you have Dever, there's pestilence in a city, okay, disease, pestilence, nice, pleasant city to be in. Kanes Raglacha, put your feet in your house, which basically means, stay inside and lock your doors. Don't be walking around out there in the street. Keep safe. Shenamar, like it says in the pasuk, by the story of Makas Bacharos and Mitzrayim, V'atem lo seitzu ish mipesach beiso ad boker. So the idea was, why was the Kadosh Baruch Hu telling you not to go outside? Because it's dangerous outside. So you stay inside. Double, triple lock your door, and that is it. V'omer, and also says, Lecha mi, go my nation, bo bechedrayach, go into your rooms, zgor de lasayach, and lock your, zgor de lasayach badech, and lock the doors in front of you. V'omer, and it says, Mechutz teshakel cherub, if you have a cherub, a sword, outside, being meshakel, basically killing people, the word the shikul literally in Hebrew means bereaving. There's an expression, unfortunately, again, Rachman Ali Sonar from these things, that's what is unfortunately much used here in Eretz Yisrael about the mishpachot shikulot, the bereaved, the families who lose their children at war, etc. So that's the root of that word. Michus teshakel cherub, if you have a sword, bereaving people outside, in other words, killing people outside, mechadarim eman, inside is going to be fear. Now, the Gemara is going to explain what are these three psukim here trying to tell us, what's the flow and the development of the idea. Mai va'omer, what does it mean when it says, and it says, and it says, and it says, what do we keep on going through the psukim? So we say like this, v'chitemi, maybe you'll say, hanimili belelia. Maybe the idea that you shouldn't be going outside when there's a disease and pestilence out there, that's at nighttime, like was spoken about in Mitzrayim, about the Yomamalo. Maybe by day, it's not so bad, it's light outside, I don't know what. You know, don't worry about going outside during the day. Toshma, so we bring the next plus. No. Doesn't matter. There's no distinctions made day and night. Leich ami ba bechedrayach uskor de vasayach. Go, my nation, to your rooms. Lock the doors. Doesn't matter when. Bechitema hani milahecha deleka eimot migavoy. Maybe that's only true that you lock yourself in your house when there's no fear inside the house. Abahecha deika eimot migavoy. But if you have a fear inside the house as well, so King Nafik, if you would go out, Yosibene Inchi Bitsavta, Ba'alma, Bitsavta Ba'alma, maybe going outside and you can sit in the Bitsavta, in the company of Inchi, in the company of people out there, and Tfei Mali, maybe that'll be even better. If you're nervous and you're scared of what's going on, maybe you want to get outside and get a little bit of a comfort and a chizik. No, Tashma, Mechut, Teshakel, Cherub, if there's a sword, going outside, killing out there, Mechadarim, Eima, even if, as we're about to explain, even if there's fear inside your rooms, inside the closed doors, you stay in there. Even though there's a fear inside, keep in mind that outside there's a sword, there's death. Don't go out there. It doesn't matter if you're scared or nervous, you don't know what's going on, you don't have the news, you're cut off from the world, etc. Stay inside and keep safe. What? You're nervous, you know. You're nervous. In other words, like I was just describing, you don't know what's going on. You're scared about what's happening. You're trying to figure out what's going on up there in the world. You don't know what's going on. But just as an example, right? There are unfortunately tens, if not hundreds, of these examples. But we're reading a book recently. When I say recently, I mean the past like 5 years. But somewhere recently, whatever that means, in a very vague sense. Reading a book written by one of the survivors of the Slobodka Kovno ghetto, and he describes how in his bunker that they had dug themselves into towards the end of the war, so they were basically cut off from all they're totally cut off from civilization. It's not like you're locked in an attic where maybe there's a window and you can see, and there's someone downstairs who's there under the ground, totally locked away, and you have no idea whatsoever what is going on. They stayed in a bunker. They stored food in them, and the truth is, and but people were getting very hungry. by the end. They stayed in the bunker over a week after the war was over, just plain and simply because you didn't really know what was going on. And it took one, you know, brave person to say, wait, it's been awfully quiet out there, and, you know, day after day not wanting to get trapped. And eventually someone goes and takes a peek. But you're petrified. So says the Chazal, but if you're worried about some kind of a sakana out there in the street, the best advice, again, eitz tova, the best advice, because I'll give you, lock yourself inside, stay in, hide, and it doesn't matter if you don't know what's going on. Stick around. It's better than the other options. Okay, the Gemara tells a story on a similar note. Yeah. What was that? Okay, no, just feel free. He's a nice guy. Rava be'idon ritzcha, when there was a time of anger, a time of wrath. And the Rashi points out what that means is there was dever. In other words, a similar thing to this Gemara. Hashem is angry, he's sending some plague to the people. Heavy sochar kovei, he would lock, he would close up kovei, his windows, to make sure that there was basically no light, no contact with the outside. Dechsiv, quoting a pasuk in Yirmiyah about the Churban, ki olam aviz b'chaloneinu, there was death coming in through our windows. So therefore, Rava said, if you see that, I don't know, having a window to the outside was looked on not favorably by Yirmiyah, and I'm locking on my windows when there are problems. Okay, boarding up the windows. Tana Rabbanan, Rava be'ir, if there is hunger, famine in the city, pazeir raglocha, get your legs out of there. In other words, literally the words mean spread your legs out. What that means is you pick up, go, leave the city, don't be sticking around. Now, the Marsha points out on the Gemara over here that even though before, and we spoke about pestilence in the city, so they just lock yourself in the house, right? So the Marsha points out the truth of the matter is the best thing to do when there's pestilence in the city is to get out of it also and move to somewhere else if you can escape. The Gemara there just pointing out that it could be that somebody would, what do you call it, not realize how serious it is. He doesn't want to leave his house, whatever it is. Okay, so at least go inside the house. If there's no food already that you can have, there's a pasuk, a rav over there, you've got to get out. Shinam, we quote the pasuk, vayhi rav ba'aretz, when there's a famine in the land, in Eretz Yisrael, vayered Avram and Mitzrayim alagursham, Avram Avinu goes down to Mitzrayim to live over there. And let's keep in mind, this is a very important Gemara, you're going to be learning Chumash a little bit this year, hopefully more than in the past. You remember Parshas Lech Lecha, that there's a well-known Rashi, Malachlogos between Rashi and the Ramban, when Avram Avinu went down to Mitzrayim because of that famine, was he doing a positive thing or not? Rashi learns that, which is basically what Chazal are learning over here, that was a good thing. The way Rashi explains, not only did he leave the city, which Rashi doesn't discuss, which was Chazal's advice that they're learning from Avraham Avinu over here, but Rashi points out he had a Nisayon, he was told to go to Eretz Yisrael, and the way the Chumash seems to describe, soon after he gets there, it's a horrible place to be, I want to get out of here, so you stick it out, and you're sort of reminiscent of coming to OJ for the year, as soon as you get here, so it's a, I'm going to say horrible place to be, but it might be a little bit scary. Then you saw you, and as you stick it out, you trust that this is the right thing. And Rambam is going to be talking to Kaddish Baruch, and that's the sheet of Rashi and Chumash. The Ramban argues on the Rashi, and Ramban argues that Rambam was chote by leaving and going to Mitzrayim. Hashem said you're supposed to go to Eretz Yisrael. Aye, there are problems there. That's true, but Hashem told you to go there. You stick it out and be a little bit stronger. So this Chazal is very clearly not going like the Ramban. Of course, the Ramban is explaining his understanding of the Pashat Pshat in the Pesukim. And Chazal are telling you a different limud on whatever other level. V'omer. It also says in the Torah, Im amarnu navo ha'ir v'harav ba'ir v'masnu sham. Rashi points out, there's a well-known story, read about it in one of the Aftaras and Parshas Nos, of the Arba Mitzorayim. You had four Mitzorayim were traveling around in Sefer Malachim. What was that? Yom HaMetzah Parsha. Okay, very good. And so the Mitzrayim, when they're wondering what they're supposed to be doing, they say, well, if we go into the city and there's a famine in that city, we might die. Hey, let's not go into the city. Okay. My v'omer. So the Gemara now questions again. What are we proving by the next pasuk? V'chi tema, because maybe you would have said, hanimili hecha deleka safik nefashas. Maybe what Avraham Avinu did was okay. He was leaving a place of famine, going to a place where he had no suffix for his life. In other words, he had no reason to assume when he left that he was going to get killed by going on that journey. The truth is, when he got to Mitzrayim, he had to make the deal with Sarai Mena to make sure. But the bottom line is, he was safe in Mitzrayim. About Heicha Deika Suffix Nefasho is low, but maybe if you have a suffix about your life, should I go into that? Is that a safe place to go? Maybe I shouldn't leave home just to put myself, the expression, out of the frying pan into the fire. So therefore, Rashi says, Toshma, excuse me, read right in the ground, we'll get to the Rashi. Toshma, Rashi points out the end of that pasuk is, L'chu v'nofle el machane aram. Okay, you know what? That city, that has a famine, but let's go and you know, descend, go down to the camp of Aram, the nation of Aram, and if we live, we live. In other words, basically what we're learning from there is, in the way the Nach is describing the story, if we go to that city, we're going to die. There's no food. You can't live without food. You go to the camp of the enemy, who knows what's going to happen? Maybe yes, maybe no. Suffolk Nefashos is better than the Vandite death that you'll have if you go to a place where you have nothing to eat. Okay. Tana Rabbanan, right? Again, these Gemaras are relatively simple. Tana Rabbanan, the Brisa says, Dever be'ir, if you have a pestilence out there in the city, Al Yahalich Adam be'emsa adav, don't walk in the middle of the road. Why not? Because you're going to meet up with a very unwelcome guest. Bifnei, Shemalach HaMavis Mahalich be'emsa adrachim. The Malach HaMavis himself walks around the middle of the road when there's pestilence and disease. Kevin, Yavilei Rishusa. Because once he gets Rashut to go out and do his stuff, right, he's basically working overtime. Now, Mazgei Lehed, he walks out in the open. He doesn't care. He's in charge. I'm the boss over here. Stay away. But Shalom Biyah, when it's with this peace in the city, a regular, normal activity, Al Yonik, but see, they drop him. You should not walk too close to the wall. They stay away from the edges and the dark alleys. Why? Kevin, the less lay Rashus, since the Malach HaMavis doesn't have Rashus, it's Shalom, he's supposed to be keeping a peace, etc. V'chazei chavuyei umazgi, he hides himself, he does machbu'im umazgi and walks, and therefore you don't want to walk in the deserted, dark areas like that. Stay out in the open, lest you meet the Malach HaMavis, which is probably not a nice thing. What? Well, let's make you a challenge. You go walk on the side of the road and see what happens. One might venture to say that the mugger who kills you might be a shliach of that very same Malach HaMavis. You know, I'm not sure if we're worried about like something with horns going and like that, as much as a some shliach. Like, you don't know what goes on. You're walking in the dark alley in the bad neighborhoods, right? So that guy is your lucky Malach HaMavis of the day. No, Malach HaMavis apparently has some kind of a right to do his job. Shalom, shalom. What was that? Malach means to go. He walks, travels. Because he doesn't walk freely. He doesn't stay in one place. He doesn't lock himself in a trash can like Oscar the Grouch and stays there the rest of his life. He moves around, but he just hides out on the side. No, because since he's off duty, in other words, he's been ushered from functioning in this area, Hashem has decreed that there's Shalom Ba'ir, right? So where does he go? He's not really welcome there. So Kodesh Baruch Hu, you know, put him on the side. Yeah. Now, again, it is quite obvious, as the Ramchal points out in his Maimar al Agados, that many of the Agados in Chazal we don't take incredibly literally in the sense of, we don't have to assume that there is this worldwide Malach HaMavis in every single alleyway in every spot in the world, and therefore whatever. The Chazal giving an advice that when there's a general Shalom in the city, it is not a smart idea to put yourself in the deserted places, because that's where the trouble is going to be. Does it necessarily mean in that alleyway and in that corner there's a Malach HaMavis sitting there waiting to get you in particular? Not necessarily, but you don't know, so stay away. Hang out in the open, nice, lit areas that are calm and secure. Okay. What was that? The Gemara's and Brachos indicate the Shein all over the place, so you know, we don't really know. It's hard to say.
Is it actually real?
Huh?
Yes.
The things are actually real?
You
think
they're actually real? I thought
it was the Chazal. Yeah, the Rav Mishitas are all rejected by the Rishonim, so yeah, one did not be cursed. He doesn't believe that it's... The Rambam has the Rishonim, right, that we don't accept the Rishonim, the Rambam's opinions. The Gra writes the Feirush in his Feirush and Shulchan Aruch that we reject the Rambam Shitas about all of the esoteric and mystical things.
The Rambam says there was, or
there aren't. In other words, Chazal spoke about it, and there aren't. They're not floating around anymore. Yeah. Okay. Now, huh? Maybe yes, maybe no. Yeah, again, they're the pashtuses. The pashtuses of the Gra wrote those comments. If you look back at the older versions, etc. of the manuscripts, the pashtuses of it, huh? It was a funny thing because we know people that saw the dibur by the Chafetz Chaim, and they're still alive. Some of the people, so it's hard to imagine that in the 30s.
They heard the story.
People said they were there. They were Tamidim in Yeshiva. Rachanan Vassam was the one who got rid of the Divik. His Tamidim are still alive, Rachanan. Many Tamidim who were Some girl, I don't know, I'm not sure exactly what it was. So that's, what do you call it? That's a story that we know to be true. So it's,
what was
that?
I believe it, but some people
say
the
Kaddish was knows? You know, it's hard to believe that the Chofetz Chaim or Chana Vassan, I forgot the other two Dayanim that were involved, were all just like duped, you know, like absolute fools. It's hard to believe. They were smart people. What was that? No. Moving right on. The Gemara says like this. Tanu Rabban, a good scholar at the attempt of a tangent over here, but we're going right there. Yeah, no, I'll show you all the. I'll show you all the Marma comments a little bit later, where those things are going to come up. Tanu Rabban, the Bryce is now read again. Dever Ba'ir Al Yikanis Adam Yakir at the Beit HaKnesses. If there's pestilence out in the city, do not go alone into a shul. Shemalach Hamavet Mafkid Sham Kalev. Very strange idea. The Malach HaMavet leaves his stuff in the shul. Now, there's a very important Gemara stuff, whatever he has, and his equipment, his guns, his, I don't know, whatever, his pestilence, I don't know what he has exactly, Malach HaMavet. What was that? Mafka, I said he leaves it, right. That's a deposit, he leaves. What was that? Right, because he goes to pick it up, or wherever he left. When I'm Mafka telling you to watch, I want it back. So he stores his stuff there, and he goes and takes it whenever he... whenever he needs. Now the truth is that the Chazam in a couple of places, though they don't make a kshar between these things, indicate the numerous times that for some reason shuls were places that that harbored certain negative things. There's a famous story in the Gemara in Gittin and Daf Lamed, excuse me, Kiddushin Daf Lamed, the Gemara describes, the Gemara describes this as a very famous seven-headed demon that was plaguing one of the shuls that was there in Babel. Apparently, the shuls are places, as we can well imagine, where not so they weren't always used. In other words, there were times during the day that they were deserted. People came to the shul in the morning and at night, etc. So it was a perfect place if you wanted to be a Malach HaMavis or some other negative force in the world to hang out, because you weren't always going to be having the company of whoever it is. If it was a main dorm of 4 or 5, so then already there might be people there at any given hour during the day. But the Beis HaMedrash is empty during the afternoon. Now, says the, what was that? There you go, right? Hani, immediately, heicha de lo koro beidar ziki lo matzu beyasara. But says the Gemara, that idea that the Malach HaMavet is there in the shul is only if there's no people learning there. Koro beidar ziki means they're not teaching children, the children aren't learning Torah. But lo matzu beyasara, if you don't have 10 people in the shul, so then already, when it's basically deserted, that's a place, that's when the danger is there. But if it's populated and there's people around, so then, what do you call it? So then you got to watch out. Okay. The next Gemara is a bit tricky over here. The Gemara says like this. It's a two-liner, but it's actually a long, complicated piece. Tanur Rabbanan. The Braisa says, Klavim Bochim. If you have dogs that are crying, like sort of happens on a nightly basis in the mountains around Beit Meir, Malach...
About
a cave, but
I was up on the
mountain,
right?
No, you were.
Other
than that,
something wrong.
Every time you go
barking, right? All
sounds
like all over, like
you
turn
around. Happens every night. And then you're amazing. Yeah, happens every night. Most of them are jackals, they're not an actual dog, right? The Tanur Rabbanan, Klavim Bochim, if the dogs are crying, and according to some Girsos and some Rishonim, it's Klavim Tzolakim, if they're screaming, Malach Hamavet Ba Le'ir. That is a sign that you do not want to be in the cave outside of Beit Meir alone in a dark, what do you call it? Aside from these snakes and other things that are up there, but the Malach HaMavis, there are snakes up there. The Malach HaMavis is out in that city. Klavim Mesachakim. But if the dogs are out there laughing, which also happens at night, you have to learn the difference between a dog laugh and a crane. They really do. The hyena laugh, whatever, the jackal laugh. Then Eliyahu Navi Balayir, that is a sim in that. Elijah the prophet is coming to town with his reindeer sled. Eliyahu is coming. That's only if there's no female dogs around. Why? Because if there are female dogs around, like Rashi points out, we don't really need to elaborate. The reason why the dogs are screaming and happy and excited are because there's a girl in town and the dogs are attracted to her, etc. Know what I'm saying? Now, so that is the Gemara. So now, knowing that in terms of your cave experience and knowing that there are male, female, etc., a lot of dogs floating around, so we don't attribute that much significance in Beit Meir when the animals are making noise at night. But in theory, if you had, I don't know, a male, you know, the only male dogs floating around and they're making whatever noises, so then you have these issues. Now, there's a long discussion in a sefer of the Maharal Prague known as the Ber HaGola. It's called Ber HaChamishi, the fifth section of this book of the Maharal, where he has a talk to try to explain what exactly the significance is. He points out that some people were asking the question, but more of it, more asking in an accusatory kind of a matter. Well, the dogs don't know anything. The dog's crying, dog's laughing, that's a simon, this, that. How can a dog, first of all, know what's going on? Second of all, why would the dog have this fine-tuned attachment to Eliyahu HaNavi and to Malach HaMavis? What is that all about? And the Maharal then goes on into, again, a little bit of a tricky philosophical discussion explaining different attitudes that Chazal had to what a dog actually is, why the dog might be more functional. I'll say it over very quickly. I honestly would recommend, if you have the time, to try to pull out the Sefer off the shelf and try to read it, because he goes on pages to explain this Gemara over here. But Rami Prague points out like this. We find, and the truth of the matter is, he quotes a lot of Maimar and Chazal to this effect, but the truth of the matter is, in Stam, in world culture, this is true as well, that Chazal looked at dogs as being one of the most lowly creatures that were out there. Right? When you want to curse out your friend, right, you stupid dog, you dog Jew, you something like that, there are all different expressions that we might have heard or at least read about, etc. That there are expressions that are float around. Like then Chazal have similar expressions, not a name that they were calling other people, but when they wanted to speak about lowly things, he spoke about dogs. One of the famous, it's not really in a Chazal and a Gemara, but it's a famous quote that comes up now that you might see in some of your Machzorim or you learn about before Rosh Hashanah time from the Arizal. The Arizal pointed out that anyone who davens for his own personal needs on Rosh Hashanah time is like a kelev who tzoeit hava, you're like a dog barking like that. When they wanted to speak about negative things, they spoke about dogs. Right? Dogs are looked at as lowly creatures. Okay. So the Maral, I shouldn't have said that. Okay, now, moving on. A different time. Remember I said that, and close Rosh Hashanah, we'll talk about that. So the Maral now says like this, that there's another Chazal that we might have learned about. Do we have any Tazriya Masora Bar Mitzvah Parashios over here, since it's Bar Mitzvah then? Okay, so if you look at the Rashi in the beginning of Parashios Masora, points out, but again this is a known Chazal, it also comes up in a Medrash quoted by Rashi in Parashios Bereishis, that the Bria of Adam, right, the Bria of the human being, was put after all of the other creatures in the world. Right? And the way it's quoted by Chazal and Bereishis is that gives you the lesson. And if you make yourself, right, the word Adam, right, the Chazal pointed out, Adama le'elyon, I can be comparable to a Kaddish Baruch Hu up in Shemaim. And on the other hand, if I don't perfect myself and I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing to them, I'm like the Adam, I'm like the dirt, and all the creatures of the world, we say, were created before you. You're the last on the totem pole, you're nothing, etc. A person can go either way. The Maral explains that idea, this is a theme that in many of the Maral's writings highlights the idea that the Adam, the person, is basically the pinnacle of creation. And because he's so special, that Selim Elohim, he always, and the Maral speaks about this more in particular in terms of Klal Yisrael, always exists on extremes. You're either the top or you're the bottom, because you have potential to be the top, and that's where you should be. And you're not, you're the biggest loser of all. Right? A dog, who's a dog, or a cow, who's a cow. It's not so sad for a cow to be a cow. Remember once there was a Talmud here who was not doing well, or not producing well, the months are going by, he's not getting into learning, he's this, he's still there, whatever it was. So eventually we sat down to one of these heart-to-heart kind of talks, and we started with the classic line of, well, what do you want to do with your life? And you start to tell, well, you're going to have to wake up in the morning to go to work and to go to school, da 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 da. And it turned out the person didn't really have any goals for himself. What do you want to do? I want to live. I couldn't believe I heard this, but I want to live. You want to live? What do you want to do? I want to live, have a family, be alive. That's your goal in life? Yeah, that's my goal in life. So I got a little frustrated after this, went around in circles and said, so basically you're telling me you want to be a cow, right? Cows also live, cows also eat, they have family. You want to be a cow? Yeah, that's not bad to be a cow. So the truth is, when a cow is a cow, it's not so sad. When a person wants to be a cow, that is a very big waste of a person's life. So it says the Maral like this. Maral Prague writes, the lesson over here is as follows. First of all, the Malach HaMavis, that represents the ultimate in terms of loss in this world, right? Loss of life, loss of a creature in Olam HaZeh. Eliyahu represents the other extreme. That Eliyahu is coming because he's the Mevaser HaGeulah, he's the one who's heralding the perfection of the world, the Tikkun HaOlam, etc., all the beautiful things that we're hoping for in the future. The two extremes. The dog, okay, the Maral says, because the dog, Davka, is the polar opposite creation in Chazal's eyes of a person, a man's on top, the dog is the lowest of the low. The dog, because he's a nothing, the Maral says, has a certain ability, because he's such a nothing, to be more in tune with things that are going on in the netherworld, if you want to use such an expression, then the person does. The person can become an extreme. The person can be higher, as Chazal say, than a malach, like totally separate and distinct from anything else. Lives on his own on his own plane. When the person, on the other hand, is not where he's supposed to be, why is the malach hamavet coming along? Because the person is not the biggest of tzaddikim, etc. So what do we say? Even a dog is going to know that the malach hamavet is coming. Because I'm telling you, right, that you've messed up so badly that even the nothings that are out there in the world are better than you. They're aware of the death. And on the other hand, right, when people are mamish up there, like when we mamish perfected ourselves in this world, the kalavim amesachekim. Why? Because even the nothings, even the world at large, as far as you can go, but are picked up and are affected by the shleimus and by the perfection that the person has or the people have have achieved out there. And again, there are other explanations in Gemara also. But again, look in the Maral Frantzilim. Now the Gemara gets into an actual sugya over here. We're going to start off with some important topics. Bera gola ber hek. The Gemara says like this: Yosef, Rav Ami, Rav Asi, Kameder, Rav Yitzchak Nafla. Rav Ami, Rav Asi are sitting in front of Rav Yitzchak Nafla. They're waiting to hear some divrei Torah and some kind of a shir. Mar Amarle, one of them said. The Gemara doesn't tell the names. And one of them said to him, Lema Mar Shmaitis. So tell me a sugya. I want to hear a lumdus, a nice sugya in learning. So Mar Amarle, the other one says to him, Lema Mar Agadata. Tell me a story. Tell me some Agadata. Right? Obviously, each one reflecting his own interest, I guess we'll call it, at the time. Postak lemeimer agadata. So he decided, Rav Yitzchak Nafla, I'm going to start off with the agadata. There is a meimer chazal. You should always start off learning with some kind of a joke, a laugh, or something like that, something a little bit light. But lo shavik mar. But the other one didn't let him. I want something real. We came to learn. Pasach lemeimer shmeitzer. So he starts to say a sugya. Velo shavik mar. And the other one says, No. You have to start off with something lighter. So Amar Lehem, so he says to them, this is not going to work. Em shalachem mashal amad dover. Don't let me give you an example of what's happening over here. The other sheyesh lo shtei nashim, a guy has two wives, achas yaluda v'achas zekena, one young and one old. The yaluda, the younger one, melaketes lo levana. She's going to pluck, pick out the white hairs from her husband's head. She wants him to look young, just like her. And this is a Kena, the old one who's all gray and old. Malaketes lo shcharas. She wants the husband to look gray, just like she is. She wants them to be equal. Nimsa kireach mikana mikana. Turns out he's going to be bald here and there. He got no gray hairs. He got no black hairs. He totally loses out. So Omer then he says to them, "You want me to do this? You want me to do this? This is not going to work. I'm not going to say anything. So you know what? I'm going to take a middle ground." I'm going to figure something out to say that's shavya, that's equal for both. I'm going to pull off the impossible. It says like this: the Torah speaks about the fire going out, finding thorns to burn. The Gemara points out, teitzei me'atma. The word teitzei, the fire spread, indicates that the fire is spreading on its own. I'm not fanning it, I'm not blowing it, I didn't make one of these lines of gunpowder to make the fire go up to that bonfire. The fire spread. Shalim yishalim amavir et ha-be'era. The person who was mavir et ha-be'era, the person who lighted that conflagration, has to pay. And as Rashi points out, the mashmos of that expression is that the mavir et ha-be'era, the person who lit the fire, pays, meaning to say a be'era, just to make sure we all know the Hebrew terms, the difference between an eish and the be'era is what? Very simple. Basic Hebrew word. Eish means a fire, any size. A be'era means a whole, I use that word, a conflagration, a whole massive thing that's burning down. A building, right, is a be'era, right? We have a problem on our hands in there. Now, because it means not a little fire. It means a torch. That's what he used the word torch before. It's something of thing of it. Something's going to cause a real fire. Now, what was that?
Eish is just like a match.
Yeah, or a contained fire. They're not burning something down. No, it's a fire. The term, as the Rashi points out of it also, Mavir Eshab Be'era, indicates that who lit that fire right there? Now, how did that fire get there? There's a Mavir. There's someone who lit that fire. Now, I didn't really light that fire. I lit a match in my house. The match happened to have caught hold onto some tree. Tree burnt down, burnt the next tree, the whole block is, but I didn't really light the building on fire. But nevertheless, the Torah calls the guy who lit the match, the guy who burnt the house, I lit the house on fire. So says Rabbi Yitzchak Nafka like this. What's the significance? He says a very interesting agada to them. Omer Kadosh Baruch Hu alai l'shalim es ha-be'era she'ivarti. I have to pay back for the fire, for the burning that I burned. Ani hetzisi eish b'tzion. I lit a fire in Tzion. Shenemar v'yotzeis eish b'tzion v'tochel v'tochel yisodo seha. I lit the fire in Tzion and it ate up all the foundations of Yerushalayim. V'ani atid livnotan. I, in the future, I'm going to build it back be'eish with fire. Also, quoting a famous pasuk that we say in Nachem, Ani eya l'chomas eish saviv. I'm going to be a wall of fire around Yerushalayim with a chavod ihyeh b'socha. And I will be the covered inside, HaKadosh Baruch will be the covered inside the city of Yerushalayim. Now, what does that mean? So Rashi points out a very, very interesting little thing. Rashi says, Ki seitzei me'atmon. Chazal say the fire in the pasuk burnt on its own. Rashi explains what that means is, Anachnu garamnu lo shekilkanu. We caused the fire. Shekilkanu, because we messed up. We did aveira. So it wasn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want to do that. We were the ones who caused the problem. And as the Marsha points out even a little bit more within the Rashi, says the Marsha, even vaiter than that. That we know the pasuk tells us, Ki me'iti lo seitzei rosh, the Kadosh Baruch doesn't do bad things in the world. It's actually relevant to Parsha Kisavo that's coming up. The idea appears a number of times in the Parsha. I don't do bad things in this world. What I do, what Kadosh Baruch Hu says is if you're not going the proper way, I remove a degree of my ashkacha process, I remove my control, and what happens when I'm not actively involved in the affairs of the world? Everything goes nuts. That's where we have all the problems. Afani eleichi imachem b'chamas keri. I'm going to leave things to chance, as the Pesukim explained in the Tokhapa. So says the Marsha, right, Ki seitzei me'atma, the fire spreads on its own. What does that mean? Yeah, we did the Aveiros. We caused the Kadosh Baruch Hu to say, I'm going to have to pull back a little bit. What happens when the Kadosh Baruch Hu removes his Ashgacha? That's when the fire, that's when the Chorbanos and the Peraneos all start to be. But the Kadosh Baruch Hu promises us, the Marsha says, an unbelievable thing. You know what? It wasn't even really my fault that this happened. You guys messed up. Nevertheless, the Kadosh Baruch Hu promises, I'm going to come down, put all the pieces back into place by myself, without even necessarily waiting or allowing you to go and do it. There's a beautiful piece in a sefer called the Tomer Devora, on the first, imagine the beginning, the first perek. The Tomer Devora uses a very moving expression. He refers to Hashem as the Melech Oluv, the cursed king, the rejected king. What does that mean? Explains based on the idea that the Marsha is explaining over here, that the Kadosh Baruch Hu is the king of the world. He wants to do everything good for us. He's going to build Yerushalayim and he's going to bring it and all that. What happens? We walk around rejecting. We walk around cursing him. And the funny thing is, right, is that as much as we're messing up left and right, backwards and forwards, the Kadosh Baruch Hu is still there doing all the good things. We're sitting in his face and he's being nice right back. And why does he do it? Because he has an incredible amount of chesed and rachamim and love for all of us, even though we don't always deserve it. We have to recognize, as the Tomer Devora says, that all of our actions, all the negative actions, the man is spitting in the Kadosh Baruch Hu's face, and that's the idea of the Gemara over here. So that was the Agadah part. Shmaitis up, and then he continues. So now let me tell you, on that same pasuk, a sugya I'm learning. I start off with a drasha about how that pasuk relates to Kadosh Baruch Hu's interaction with the Churban, but now I'm going to take the same pasuk and the same idea. What was the idea? The fire spreads on its own, but the person who lit the end result is looked at as if he did it with his own two hands. So now we say like this. There's a halacha learned from them. The pasuk HaKadosh Baruch Hu Menizkei Mamono. On the one hand, the Torah starts off describing fire as your property that's damaging. The fire spreads and burns. But Siyem Benizkei Gufo. But in the end of the pasuk, it concludes indicating fire is as if you yourself burnt something down. That was the idea of Mavir Esat Be'era. You're the guy who lit the fire that burnt. You lit the building. I didn't like the building, but it says that I did. Why? Lo Malach, that's teaching me Isho Mishum Chitav. An idea we mentioned once before, that Eish is viewed as your arrow. You shot the Eish into that place. Rashi points out again the famous mashal, the same when you shoot the arrow flies and travels far away and does its damage, but it's me that did the damage. The same thing is true with Eish. Rashi refers you to the sugya in the second parak. One of the significances of that is that if it was to light a fire and the fire was to go and do damage to another person, I would have to pay the famous Dalad Devarim, the Nezik, Tzar, Ripa, Shevis, and Boshet, as if I went and smacked him in the head and caused the damage that way. It looked as if I physically had done the damage to that person. Okay.
What person did
you die in? Kiseite Yesh. Now, in other words, that was why he said, I'm going to give you a shmaitis and an agadah on the same thing. I'm going to go take one pasuk and I'll start up the shiur with the same idea, the same concept of he says, say, may atma, the fire spreads on its own, but in the end, it's like you did it. So there was an agadah that he said on that and a halachic issue about isha misham chitzav. Okay. That's what it is. The fire is traveling. It's not me. The fire is going and burning. Memorial thing, something you made. It doesn't mean you're a property per se. Now, the Gemara is now, once we're on the tangent subject over here, get into a very famous, like I said, this is probably the most famous, probably the most famous sugya in the sixth parak in, what do you call it, in Bava Kam over here. As we'll get to a little bit into the story, this has to do with Eish, but it's it has a major ramifications in a lot of different areas. It says like this. Vayitzaved David. David has a taiva, desire. Vayomran says, "Mi yashkeni mayim mibor beit lechem." Who can give me water to drink from the bor, from the well in beit lechem? Asher bashad is sitting by the gate of the city, and he gives that a challenge. Now, if you look over there in the navi, David and Melech is sitting in a place called Emek Rifaim, which is somewhere in the valleys outside of Beit Shemesh. Beit Lechem is, even with a car, about half an hour away from there. So David HaMelech is not in the area of Beit Lechem in the slightest bit. Okay, he's in the middle of fighting a war with the Plishtim, right in that same area. The famous story of David and Goliath that took place over, over there, which is about, whatever, also half an hour away from here as well. And David has this strange line. He has a taiva, can someone get me water from the well in Beit Lechem? What's wrong with the water around the corner? We don't know. We're going to see in Chazal what they describe in this puzzle in a second. Vayivaku shlosha tagiburim b'machane plishtim. Three champions, three giborim, break into the plishtim camp in Beit Lechem. Vayishavu mayim ibor Beit Lechem asher b'shar. And they drew water from that well. Bring it back, and then the end of the pasuk is, as the Gemara is going to quote later on, the low of the Dover Lishto, some Dover refused to drink. Right? Very strange thing. So can you go on a dangerous commando mission, break into place and get me water? Oh, shkoach, I don't want it. Right? So what's happening over here in this story? The Gemara says, my kami boiler. What was he asking? What did he want? Now, the Marsha points out that we're about to see in the Gemara here, that the pasuk is totally not taken literally in the slightest bit. There was no water, there was no Beit Lechem, none of this took place, according to the way Chazal is going to understand the pasuk. And the Marsha points out, so how did Chazal know? What did they see in these psukim? They're going to totally change around the conversation between the David and these soldiers, and we're going to get into a Sanhedrin soon, etc. So Marsha says that there's a couple of issues. The first one, when you look at the psukim, they're very, very odd, right? It's very difficult to understand on a simple level. Like I pointed out before, what's wrong with the water that's sitting there in your camp? Why do you have to travel a half an hour by car to go to a well? There's a waterfall for the sinks, the wells all over the place. What do you need that in particular for? If you're going to send your men in to go and do something dangerous, what's the point of saying when you come back, you had a taiva for the water, then you say, oh, no, I don't want it. Like, what was happening? The Marsha pointed out there's a third problem with the pasuk that's here, that says like this. What does David HaMelech ask for? Mi yashkeni mayim. How do you translate that literally? Who's gonna...
Drink water.
Huh? It's actually a funny expression. Who's gonna drink me water? Right? Now, what does that mean? The Marsha says like this. The word literally, if you take the word literally, would mean that David HaMelech wants to sit back with his mouth open and have someone pouring a cup of water into his throat. You're gonna drink me, for lack of a better word, I'm just making up a word in English. You're gonna feed me, but the way we're using it over here, you're going to drink me the water. David HaMelech has no need to sit back and have someone pour water into his throat. You take the cup, you drink the water yourself. He could have said in the pasuk, "Me yivieni mayim," who's going to bring the water for me, but it doesn't say that. So therefore the Chazal understood that David HaMelech was davka asking a question, a shayla that was there. Mayim over here is going to represent, obviously, Torah, a mayim, the Torah, another famous Gemara later on in the seventh parak in Masechet Bava Kamma. There's some issue that David needed somebody else to paskin for him. That's why he said, Mi yashkeni, who's going to feed me the water? Someone has to give me a tshuva to the following issue. What is that? The Gemara explains like this. Omar Rabba, so we're going to have a couple of different pshatim here. Rava says, Omer Rav Nachman, the name of Rav Nachman, Tomon Ba'esh Kami Ba'ili. The question that David HaMelech wanted to know was, what's the story with Tomon Ba'esh? Iker Reb Yehuda, Are you karabanan? How do we paskin? Are you chayiv? Are you pater? Rashi points out over here. That's again, Chazal just see that we were taking a guess or had a mesoret, that there was a maisa balafon of a machana. That this story took place in the camp of David Melech. Sorfon nash of Gadish shall Yisrael. Somebody burnt down a Jewish person's stack of grain, and there was something tumman inside. And they wanted to tell us, so what do we do? What's the halacha? Like the sheet of Yehuda, like the sheet of the Rabbanan. Let's keep in mind, as the Nesoros Hashat points out on the side of the Gemara over here, that David HaMelech is alive many, many years before of Yehuda and the Rabbanan. So he wasn't asking on how do we paskin amongst those two. He was asking on the drasha. Well, what's the din by age? It's tumman that something that's going to be chayav a potter, right? David sees the same diak, oh hakama, like we learned last night. Oh, you're chayav to pay when you burn down standing stalks of grain that are begolui. Does that imply the things that are tumman you don't pay for? What's the din? A postulate might be postulate. The Gemara says they answer whatever they answer. Whatever the psyche is, we have in the past, and tumman beish is going to be potter. Okay. Rav Huna Omar, there was something totally different going on. Gedishim the Sa'orim the Yisrael heavy. They were. What do you call it? What's the word? I think others going to keep saying, or heaps, piles of barley of Jews. Okay, in other words, there was Amik Rafaim is a Jewish area, right? Right out over here, there were Jews who had fields, had piles of barley out there. They had these matmiri plishtim, and the plishtim were hiding inside them. They're using it as a hiding place. They would dig in to these piles of grain, basically use them to camouflage themselves to hide that. And David HaMelech wants to know like this. I know that in these fields, somewhere out there, the plishtim are hiding. You see those 400 piles of barley out there? That there's hundreds of plishtim. So I don't know where, I don't know what, but I know that they're doing that. So he asked the following shayla: Mal lahatzil atzmo the mamon chaveiro. Are we allowed to save ourselves with the property of others? If I light a fire and burn down the entire field with all the piles of grain, the plishtim are going to die, right? That's a simple thing. Instead of going and digging up every pile, hey, is there a plishtim in here? Is there a plishtim in here? I'm running a risk. Burn the whole thing down and that's it. But it doesn't belong to me. It's not mine. Are we allowed to go and destroy other people's property to save ourselves? We're going to talk more about the shayla itself in a minute. Let's just read the Gemara and then we'll discuss the issues that are involved in the question. Sholchulei, and they send back to him a surprising answer. Aser lahatzil atzim mamon chaveiro. You're not allowed to. No. But there's an important exception. About Atta Melech, but you're the king. And as Mel Brooks said in History of All Part 1, it's good to be the king. Atta a Melech, and Melech poreit laslos oderech. The rule is that a king is allowed to break down fences and walls to make a path for himself. The ain mochin biyado, and no one is allowed to protest against him. In other words, the Sanhedrin, the Dayanim, are sending back to David Melech. If it was anybody else, The halach is, you can't touch other people's stuff. Even though it might mean that you're not going to win the war, you're right, you can't do it. A king, which you happen to be, has a certain right that he's allowed to do whatever he wants. He is the king, he's in charge. The Rashi points out over here, Dira Maskel, Melech, Poret, Gadr, Zeacherim. Rashi points out that we're referring specifically to a time of war. Rashi says, Lassos, Loderech, Ula Uchlus, and for his armies that are there. And Rashi in Sanhedrin points out, Rashi himself and Daf Kaf, that we'll call it a steer a little bit. They have to work on the two opinions of Rashi, that it's not limited to the king and his armies when they need to pass through an area, so he's allowed to knock down whatever he wants to have the armies travel. The king is allowed to do whatever he wants, according to Rashi and Sanhedrin. The king wants to knock down the wall because he wants to put a bowling alley there. So good, the king will put a bowling alley. So they're telling David HaMelech, you are allowed to burn down the thing. You're allowed to command the army. You don't have to do it yourself. You're allowed to command the army to burn down. But normally, they wouldn't have been allowed. Rabban v'item Rabba bar Meri Amru. They say a third version of the story. Gadishim de Sa'orim de Yisrael Evi. There were these piles of barley of the Jews. And there were Gadishim de Adashim de Plishtim. If you look from the story repeated in Divrei Yamin, it describes that there were piles of lentils that were there. Were they lentils or were they barley? So the Gemara said they were both. They were both. The Plishtim had lentils, Jews had barley. So what? Kamibayilahu. And David is asking him like this: Ma'u lito Gadishim shall sa'orim de Yisrael. Am I allowed to take the Jews' barley, litein lifnei behem, so, and put the barley in front of the animals? In other words, use the barley for animal food. Amenas l'shalim gadishim shaladoshim the plishtim, knowing that on the condition that I'm going to pay the Jews that I'm stealing the barley from back with the lentils. The animals don't like lentils. Animals eat barley. Okay. The truth is, the Rush points out, we're going to get to a very big chiddush of the Rush in a couple of minutes. The Rush points out barley is much more expensive. Excuse me, lentils are much more expensive than barley. But the common grain of lentils are a little bit more yakar. And therefore, David asked the shayla, we need animal food for the troops or the whatever it is. Can I have access to good stuff over here. I'll steal their barley, repay them with the lentils. Is that allowed? Sholchule, and they said back to David, Chavol Yashiv, even if you return the collateral, Russia Gezela Yishalem, and the Russian will pay back his Gezel. Now you know, just in case you're not familiar, right, there is an Isser in the Torah, I've spoken about Parshas Mishpatim even, that you're not allowed to come and take collateral from somebody and keep the collateral for yourself. The Pesukim speak about it. You go to the poor person's house and you take their blanket and you have to give it back at night. You can come take it in the morning, give it back at night. You have to allow the people to keep their stuff and not to be taken. So we're calling the person who violates that and takes collateral that he wasn't allowed to take a Russia. And as Rashi explains in the Pasuk over here, what they're telling him is that Afal Pisha Gezela Neshalim, even though you might pay it back, Russia who? The Torah is still calling you a Russia. Russia Gezera Yeshalim. I am paying it back. What did I do wrong? No, Dovin Amal. To take money al Manas to pay back something else, that's still called Gezel, and you're not supposed to be doing that, except it's still good to be the king. But Asa Melech, and therefore Melech Poret Lasos Lo Derech V'ein Mochin B'yodah. You're allowed to do this, okay, because you're the Melech, but the din is, though, that a person is not supposed to be involved in stealing Almanas to pay back. Okay. Now, the Gemara is going to get into all different Diyukim and the Pesukim, who was right and why, etc. But before we get into that, let's just focus a little bit on some of the issues that come up over here in the Gemara. A lot of very important shailas that arise in these sugyas over here. First and foremost, the big, big question over here is the first shaila, actually the second shaila that was asked. The idea of a hasil asim of a mamon shel chazero, where the chazal were paskin, you're not allowed to. And the Rebbeinu Peres points out over here in this Gemara, I'm going to start with him, even though we'll see that others agree with this idea, but he says it clearly. Very difficult to understand. Yuri also writes a little bit of an arichas about this. Very difficult to understand. We think we know at least, there are three aveiros in the Torah, and only three aveiros, that are Yehoreg, Ve'al, Yavo, right? The famous three. How can Chazal come along and, so famous that I'm going to say it, how can Chazal come along and tell me that you're not allowed to save your life with somebody else's property? What are we saying? Oh, I have a choice. Doing either Hezek or Gezel or dying. Well, don't steal, better to die. Gezel is Yehoreg V'ayav, or I have to die rather than save myself, whatever, and then steal the guy's property. And that's the psa. Hadn't David HaMelech not been the king, right, he wouldn't have been able to do that. How could that be? You're fighting a war. You're not allowed to go and burn down the thing to destroy the enemy. What's going on? So, because usually at war, when the enemy wins, they're killing you, right? In other words, they have a chance to win the war. They're stopping the fushos. Right? You don't play games with that. So Tosfos and most of the Rishonim, Kimat all except for Rashi, if you take a look at the short little Tosfos here, explains like this. Ibayalei, okay, the Ma'ala Hasil Atzma, the second to last Tosfos, he's asking them, Ichayev L'shalem Kishehitzel Atzma B'nei Pikuach Nefesh. Do I have to pay when I save myself because of Pikuach Nefesh with his property? And as the Rebbeinu Peres, I quoted a second ago, elaborates on the Tosfos. Of course you're allowed to save yourself with somebody else's thing. If there's nothing stands in the way of Pikuach Nefesh, you need to break his thing, burn his thing, steal his thing to save your life, that's what you do. The only shaila in the Gemara is once I exercise my right to Pikuach Nefesh and I was allowed to destroy his thing, am I chayiv to pay him back or not? To that, the Chazal said, and the Rush explains the words of the Gemara, it's asur lahatil atzma mamon chaveiro. What does it mean you're not allowed to save yourself with your friend's property? Or allowed? No, the Rush says, you're not allowed to save yourself without paying him back. If you saved it and didn't pay back, you did l'maisi, you did something wrong. You're not allowed to just randomly take the guy's thing to save your life. You must pay back. If you look at Rashi, though, I'm going to Rashi, the very last Rashi on the page. We haven't read the line of the Gemara that Rashi says this in, but Rashi, I'll just read it to you now out of context. V'yatzila, they saved the people's piles of barley. And Rashi says, Shelo yisarfua. He made sure that they didn't burn them down. Ho'il v'asu l'hasavas azalam, because if you're not allowed to save yourself through your friend's property. Very clearly, Rashi is saying that they did not burn down the piles of grain that was there. And the Achronim point out is they say because the Parashas Drachim by the Mishnah Melech, and Simon Yutet, he points out, and many of the Achronim discuss this as well. Rashi seems to be saying over here that, right, David HaMelech said, right, if you're not allowed to do it, we're not burning down. Meaning to say, you're not allowed to destroy the other guy's stuff, even though it means you're putting your life in danger. What was that? Rashi doesn't say that. When Rashi, yeah, you're going to see in the Gemara clearly, with the line that Rashi says, when he saved the property, Rashi says, Lo yisarfu, he said, don't burn it down. Because according to Tosfos, of course you burn it down. The Shaila is, do we pay, not pay, did your other guy am it? Rashi says, no, don't burn it down. Meaning, don't burn it down. Meaning you're not allowed to do that, right? Which is a very, very, very big issue. The truth of the matter is, most of the Achronim cannot really accept Rashi's upshot over here, but there are many different attempts to try to figure out what it is. Did they say from holding right underneath my Gemara, because of Binyan Sion, the Shaila and Shiva's Binyan Sion, written by Yaakov Ellinger, one of the great, the Gadol, he wrote another sefer called the Aruch Lener, which you might have heard of as well. He has a series of tshuvas in it, Simin Kuf Samach Zayin through Kuf Ayin, three or four tshuvas that he has a long discussion trying to figure out what did Rashi mean, how could that be, going through all the different sources about Yohari B'al Yavar, are there exceptions to the rule? Because I'll say there's only three things that you have to give your life up or not for. Where do we get Gezel from, etc.? How could Rashi even say that? With discussions, what the issues behind the Machlokas here is. Again, that's a Ishai. Suffice it to say, in Shulchan Aruch, it is passing clear that you're allowed to take the guy's stuff to save your life. That is a clear psak in Shulchan Aruch. You do have to pay him back, but you're allowed to, what do you call it? You're still allowed to save your life. What? A little pushing it. Because that's not what the psak is. The psak is that you're not allowed to save yourself a mama kaveiro only if that's the last piece of food he has. Right? The halach is clear that if I, there's someone chasing me, right, and I have no way to stop him, but I see, oh, you know what, I have the Gemara right there. I'm going to pull the Gemara out of your hand with my, aim and skill at the warfare, etc. I managed to throw the Gemara, slice his throat, paper cut right across his throat, and I save my, but I destroyed your Gemara in the process. I'm not allowed to do that. I destroyed your Gemara. That's what it says. Also, I can't take your thing to stop the guy. Right?
Does it make any difference the current amount of
vegetables
they borrow
with
the
Pashtas because they're occupied by Pishtas? The Pashtas is not. The when the Chazal are coming and saying it's also to do, that's not because the Pishtas, that you want to kill the Pishtas. They're saying, yeah, but they belong to somebody else. You can't burn that down.
That
legally, they still own them. The Plishtim aren't supposed to be there. That's my stuff. It is mine. The moment the Plishtim just break out and start shooting at us, right, so I'll just take my barley back. Even though maybe they were eating it, I have no idea what they were doing, right? No. Now, the next Shiloh that was here was the third example where the Gemara speaks about the stealing the barley to feed the barley to the animals to be able to give the lentils back to the people. Now the Rush writes when he's explaining the Gemara over here, very, very, two important things. First of all, an older Rishonim point, that this Gemara is one of the sources in Chazal that are telling you, you're not allowed to steal al-manas to pay back. I know I'm going to give it back, so I'm going to steal it. It's not really stealing because I'm paying it back. No. The Gemara says you're not allowed to do that. But yet, the Rush has a tremendous chiddush over here. The end in Shulchan Aruch and Choshen Mishpat, there's a big discussion between the Shulchan Aruch and the Shach and the Taz. All the notes that came get involved. There's a long Sos and other, all the big names get involved in a discussion of this Rush. The Rush says in the back of your Gemaras over here the following mega chiddush. The Rush says like this. The only time this halacha is true, okay, that you wouldn't be able to take the barley to pay back the lentils, okay, was in a situation where the lentils were not readily available, and you're stealing the barley now, assuming that you can give the lentils back later, okay? That's called stealing amanas to pay back, that you can do. But says the Rush, let's take a different scenario. There's the barley over here, there's the lentils over here, I need the barley to pay my friend back. So what I do is, and if I in theory have rights to the lentils, like what's happening over here, I took the Plishim's lentil thing, and I say to my friend like this, okay, you know, not the guy I'm stealing from, it's a random person. I say, you know, you see these lentils over here? You pick the lentils up and be zoche in the lentils for that guy. Okay, I want you to make him the proud owner of lentils. Zoche in the Adam Shalom B'Fanav. I can give something to somebody even without him knowing about it. What says the Rush, as long as I gave him the better item back before I take the fruit, I'm allowed to take the thing. The guy's going to grab it. Where's my barley? No, you got lentils, don't worry, they're already yours. I gave it to you. I took your barley for my own thing. I gave you the lentils. And then the Rush goes on and says, as do some other Rishonim who discuss this over here, that's only true you're allowed to do that, though, when it was something that you assume that the person was willing to part with, something that he was going to sell that he didn't want. But the guy's household items that you assume a person wants, you don't have a right to come and say, don't worry, I took your grandmother's ring, but I gave you back my grandmother's ring. You can't do that. I don't want you. I want my thing over there. That is not going to work. Okay, and there's a long discussion, like I said before, in Poskim, we Paskin like the Rush doing that. It's obviously a tremendous Chiddush, and but suffice it to say, the way that the Psak Halacha seems to come out is that we try to avoid doing that. But as the Yamsha Shlomo points out, if there's a extreme circumstance and the only way to get out of whatever problem you have is doing that, a person could rely on that Chiddush of the Rush. Okay, let's go a little bit right. Let's try to get up to the Mishnah over here. We got a flight. Says the Gemara is like this. Okay, now from here on, it's all just explaining the psukim that we have. It's actually extremely easy. Bishlam adamanda omar. Did I skip it? No. Bishlam adamanda omar lach lufei. I understand, according to the person who said that the question was, can I exchange, right, the barley for the lentils? Hainu d'chsiv chad kro. That's why, but one of the psukim it says that yishom chelka tasad meleya adashim. It says in one of the psukim the field was full with lentils. K'siv chad kro. You have another pasuk in divrei hayamim. Vati chelka tasad meleya some were barley. Okay, two different things. Why? That was the shy. Can I switch this for that? Elamando amar lemikle. But according to the person who says the shy was to burn it down, each according to his own thing. What are the two psukim? Mai, excuse me, mai boyelu lani trei koi. Why do we need the two psukim? Omer lach, so he says back, because they have one amma, gedishim dadashim diyasrol, they have imim tibuhu plishtim. Very simple answer. You know why? Because there were also things of lentils that the plishtim were hiding in. Okay, very simple, nice answer. There were lentils, there was bada hiding in all of them. Bishlam al amanda omer lamik lay, I understand according to the opinion that says it was the shayu was to burn it down. Hayim lusiv ayis yat seba soka chelko vayat si lo. David HaMelech stood in that portion of land to save it. Now again, as Rashi explained, what does it mean to save it? That's where the Rashi came in to say, I told him, don't burn it down, save the barley, you're not allowed to burn the stuff down, it's not yours, we can't steal. But the person who says he was just trying to exchange the thing, what was he saving? The stuff was still there, they weren't burning it down. The Gemara points out the obvious pshat, the Lashavik Lulachluf, he saved it means, he saved the guy's barley, I didn't let you switch around, the guy had barley, still has the barley, we didn't make the trade. Bishlamahani Tarati, according to those two questions, the trade or the stealing of money to save yourself, I know the siv trade cry. That's why bechlal I have the two different psukim, excuse me, that word that was there. El Ramanda Omer Tomon Be'esh Kamivayla. But the person who says that the shayla was there was a story where in the camp itself one of the soldiers burnt down somebody's things. And why do I have to pay for the tomon? My boy lay cry. What were the psukim why were the psukim necessary? What are we expressing over there? So Amalach, excuse me, Amalach. So he says like this: Tomon v'chadah mehanach kami bayle. There were really two questions. A little chiddush. There were two questions that were asked. There was one shayla about tomon ba'ish that wasn't necessarily based on the psukim that were there in the story. He also had a shayla about one of those other questions that were there. Bishlam the manda amahani tarati according to either one of those two versions of the question. Hayinu dichtiv v'lo avid David lishto sam. That's why he says David refused to drink them. Why? What did he refuse to drink? Cave on the Ike Istura. Since there's an Isur involved. Now you're telling me I'm the king and I can do it anyway. But nobody else is. So David says, I'm going to have a Midas Chasidus. Lo Nichali. It doesn't sit well by me. I'm going to do something that's really wrong even though I'm a ladder. But I don't want to do it. I didn't drink. I didn't follow the heter that I was given. Elamanda amar tamun ba'esh kami boyle. But according to the opinion, it says he had a shayla. Are you pater or chayiv when something got burnt down that was tamun? Michti, Gemara who the shalteli. They did send them back a black and white Gemara. There's no hefty. You're potter from paying. That's the din. Right? My law of a double lishto sum. What does it mean you didn't want to drink it? What was wrong with that? That's the halacha. What's the problem? Like, so explains the Gemara, what David Melch felt was, Delo Amrinu Mishamayu. He didn't say over the psak in the name of the people that gave it over to him. Why? Omar, because he said, Kach Mekublani Beizino Shashmu HaRamasi. I have a Mesorah from Shmuel, the famous Shmuel. Kolomoser Asma Lamus Al Divrei Torah. Ein Omen Dvar Alacha Mishmo. Someone who risked his life to learn something. A very interesting line from Shmuel Hanavi. You're not allowed to say halacha in his name. It sounds like you're not supposed to die over the divrei Torah. Don't say halacha in his name. The Marsha in the back of the discussion why that's true. Take a look in the back in the Marsha. Then it says, what did he do with the water? Okay, Vayaseich Osam Lashem. He libated the water unto the Lord. That's what he did last time. What does that mean? The Bishlam and the Manda Mahani Tarity, the person who says he was asking one of those shailas that be switching around or saving himself. Mishum the over l'shem shemaim. What it means was he took the halacha, but then l'shem shemaim said, "But I don't want to do a kula. I don't want to do something that's not really right to do." It means like he gave it to God. He did a righteous thing. And lamando am a tamen ba'esh. But the person who says tamen ba'esh, my vayaseich osam l'shem. What does it mean? He poured it out to God. It was a psak given. You put it for tamen ba'esh. What was the midas chasidus? He said it over in the name of a tradition, the Gemara. In other words, David didn't want to quote their names, but he said, oh, this is the halacha, this is the Mesoros from Chazal. He taught people the proper halacha, and the Memela, the Pasuk says, oh, teaching Torah, good. That's a beautiful thing. That is the Gemara for tonight. Again, a lot to try to chaz. I would recommend going through some of the Tosafot and the other things that we had mentioned.